Okay, so we're starting Perek Hey today, chapter 5. And my goal for today is to use this first as a window to understand the structure of the remaining chapters of the book of Daniel, from here to the end of the book. Because there's a major issue that we need to address, need to put it on the table, understand it, and then we can begin to explore the details of the story. So we'll get to the read of this chapter too. But I first want to start with just an understanding. So far, we've dealt with chapters 1 through 4, and 1 through 4 have been very easy in terms of chronology. They've all been Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel and his friends. It gets more complicated when you try to stick Nebuchadnezzar or Nebuchadnezzar II into the chronological sequence of the Babylonian Empire and all the years historically. I'm not addressing any of that issue, those issues, but just in terms of the integrity of the flow of the book. 1 through 4 deals with Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 5 starts with Belshazzar. Belshazzar HaMelech asam mishteh gadol le'elef sarav ulumata elef yayin shata. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and officers, drank wine with them. Okay, we'll get to the story. But who's Belshazzar? We haven't seen him. We never heard of him. We never encountered him. Belshazzar is what described here as the son of Nebuchadnezzar, Sherotzi Nebuchadnezzar Aviv. He's not really the son of Nebuchadnezzar because there's another son in between by the name of Evil Merodach. We saw him briefly in the end of the Book of Kings. So we sort of have Belshazzar, we have Evil Merodach, who's not mentioned in Daniel, but he is mentioned in the Book of Kings. And we have, Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merodach, and Belshazzar. So this is a story. This story is known famously as the writing on the wall. We will explore it, read it, understand it momentarily. But first, I want to look at the very last verse of this chapter. Okay? This chapter ends, Bo Balayla, I'm giving you the punchline. Okay? It's like reading the last paragraph of a book before you read the book. Anybody's ever done that? Go ahead, admit it. Admit it. Raise your thumbs. You never read the last chapter before you've read a book.
Oh.
Miss the whole, know where it's going. No, it would begin with the end in mind, right? So that's how it's, that's Stephen Covey. I think his name, Covey. Bo b'layla humat Belshazzar ha-melech ha-kasti. That night, at the end of this story, Belshazzar dies. How he dies, where he dies, when he dies, we'll get to it. But one thing we know, this story takes place the year Belshazzar dies. How many years Belshazzar reigned doesn't tell us in this chapter. But if I look at Nebuchadnezzar, who was certainly a very long reigning king, in Chazal, in Tanakh, there's 45 years attributed to Nebuchadnezzar. Historically, the historical account of the Babylonian Empire gives Nebuchadnezzar the second 43 years, I believe. Right? He's really one of the longest reigning kings of Babylonian history. Belshazzar, not so. Belshazzar dies this day. So chapter 5 is the last year Belshazzar, whenever that is. Okay, we'll have to put all the chronology together. But this chapter, which begins in the beginning of his reign, okay, or actually, no, I take that back. This chapter begins during the reign of Belshazzar HaMelech, with his great feast, still to be identified, ends with the fall of Belshazzar. Okay. All right, I'm going to jump to Alatorah website because it's easier to work from here. This is chapter 5 that I just showed you. Belshazzar Malka Avid Lechem Rav made a great feast for his people. We're going to do this now chapter by chapter. I'm just going to walk you through the remaining chapters of the book. Then I'll chart it out for you. Chapter 6. V'dayavish Madoa Kabel Malchuta Kvashnin Shitin V'tartin Dayavish Hamadi. Dayavish the Mede. Why he's identified as Dayavish Hamid, I'll explain to you in a moment, receives the kingdom Kibela Machut at the age of 62. Who did he receive the kingdom from? Received the kingdom from his predecessor. Who's his predecessor? Belshazzar. In other words, Belshazzar falls, dies, and Belshazzar dies as the end of the Babylonian era. We've now entered into the era of Mada'a or Madai, also known as Aras Umadai, Persia, Mede. The United Kingdom of Persia and Mede is essentially the story of Aras Umadai, two separate kingdoms that come together at various points in time. certainly in the biblical account, it's their combination that gives them the power to overthrow Babylon, overthrow Babel. And there are a number of very famous kings in the world of Paras Umadai, the most famous, of course, being Cyrus, Koresh, Melech Paras. Koresh was Persian. This Dayavish is Mede. And there's some discussion as to the chronology. This is not the Dayavish we are familiar with in the book of Ezra Nehemiah, who allows the Jews to rebuild the temple. That Dayavish comes later. That's a Persian king. He's descended from Koresh. This one is a predecessor to Koresh, which, according to Tanakh chronology, reigns for 1 year, almost in partnership with Cyrus in Koresh. But there's a little bit of a prelude. Dayavish Hamadi comes first. So we've gone from, in this chapter, the period of Babel to the period of Persia. Okay, we move from the Babylonian exile to the Persian exile by changing our passports, something that used to happen in Europe all the time. You lived in one country and suddenly you woke up the next day and you lived in a different country. That's exactly what we have. Okay? So chapter 6 is the beginning of the reign of Dayavish. Now, what happens in that moment? Chapter 6 is a vision. Daniel has Ne'el Lifnei Dayavish Behemid Al Malchut. Chapter 6 is a story of Dayavish placing Daniel in a position of authority and stature, and then he gets framed and he gets caught in the moment of violation of the king's law, and he ends up getting thrown into the lion's den. Famous story of Daniel in the lion's den. That's chapter 6. Okay, moving right along. Chapter 7. Here's where life gets interesting. Bishnat Chada leBelshazzar, Melech Bavel. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babel, Daniel chalom ra'ah, Daniel had a dream. Umar ero shoa mishkavo, and he was in his bed, and he had a vision, and he had a dream, and he had a prophecy, and this is what it was about. And the remaining chapter dealing with the four animals that he sees and what they represent and who they represent is all chapter 7 in the first year of Belshazzar. You already begin to see the problem? Okay. Life gets really interesting. Chapter 8. Bishnat Shalosh L'malchut Belshazzar HaMelech. Year 3 of Belshazzar. So we had Belshazzar's death. Then we had year 1 of Dayavish. Now we went back to year 1 of Belshazzar. And now we're up to year 3 of Belshazzar. We go backwards, we go forwards. Another vision, Chazon Nirah Elai. Daniel has a vision. Now he's shifted back to Hebrew. This was a second vision after what had appeared to me as the first vision back in chapter in the previous chapter. And what did I see in this vision? I'm in Shushan HaBira, which is interesting because he's in Babel still. What's he doing in Shushan HaBira? Okay, Shushan HaBira is part of Persia. All right, much to be discussed.
So why has the name changed? Why has the Aleph moved? In Belshazzar, here it's after the Lamed. Shin.
How names are written in Tanakh is especially foreign kings. There's a lot of inconsistency. Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadrezzar, Aleph before, Aleph after, Achashverosh, in the beginning of the book of Megillat Esther. At the end of Megillat Esther, it's written Achashyarsh or Achashvarsh, also spelled around. When you're dealing with foreign names, I don't know if there's a consistent pattern to how they, when they get shifted, but it's certainly the same cake. There's no question.
So this has nothing to do with Belshazzar,
no,
right?
No, Belshazzar is Daniel.
Okay, right. Okay.
Belshazzar is Daniel. Okay. That's chapter 8. All right. Where do we go from here? Chapter 9. Bishnat achat l'dayavesh ben achashverosh mizera madai. Year 1 of the same Dayavish, who is the son of Achashverosh. This is before Cyrus, right? So Dayavish Hamadai Mizera, Dayavish ben Achashverosh Mizera Madai. So again, it's the same Dayavish because he's Mede, not Persian. So it's pre-Koresh, but we're now back to that same moment in time of the first year of Dayavish. Bishnat Achat L'Malcho. And Daniel has this vision, and he's trying to figure out the years of the 70 years of exile, and he has a prayer. Okay, he's praying for the Jewish people. That's chapter 9. Chapter 10. Bishnat Shalosh Lekoresh Melech Paras, year 3 of Cyrus, king of Persia. Davar Niglal Daniel Ashenikra Shmo Beltshazzar. Daniel, whose name is Beltshazzar, Julian, that's in reference to what your question was, right? Daniel has a vision, year 3 of Koresh. So if I take a step back and to this, the question of the chronology of the book of Daniel, I get a very strange picture. Okay, just to put it in perspective, so I'm going to jump to the source page again. This is the source page that got posted, and posted again if anybody's missing it. Belshazzar, year, chapter 5 is Belshazzar's big, great banquet for 1,000 nobles the night that he dies. Chapter 6, Darius the Mede, Dayavish Hamada. Chapter 7, year 1 of Belshazzar, Daniel has a dream. Chapter 8, year 3 of Belshazzar, Daniel has another dream. Chapter 9, year 1 of Dayavish ben Achashverosh of Mede, Daniel offers a prayer. Chapter 10, in the third year of Koresh, king of Persia, Daniel has a very long vision that takes him from chapter 10 till the end of the book. So chronologically, sorry, in sequence, the chapters are totally mixed up or random. Well, not only random, but they are not in chronological order. And this little chart gives you the chronology based on chapters. 1 through 4 is Nebuchadnezzar. That's easy. We'll come back to that. Chapter 5 is year 3 of Belshazzar, or at least the final year of Belshazzar, I should say. We don't have any information on Belshazzar in Tanakh post year 3. We have the vision of Daniel in year 1, we have Daniel's vision in year 3, and we have the story of his feast the night he dies. But I'll explain to you in a few moments why there's a 3 there that says this is year 3 of Belshazzar. We'll deal with that issue in a second, but it's certainly the final year of Belshazzar. Then Daniel in the lion's den is year 1 of Darius. Then Daniel's vision of the fall of Babel is year 1 of Belshazzar. That's chapter 7. Then Daniel's vision for the calculations and the dates of the fall of Babel. That's chapter 8, year 3 of Belshazzar. Then Daniel's prayer to end the exile is year 1 of Dayavish, Mede Persia. And Daniel's final vision, Persia, which is in year 3 of Cyrus, is chapters 10 and 12. I have a chunk. I have a total chunk. What do I do with this? So first of all, from a pedagogical perspective, this challenges me. Because I always debate in my head whether or not to study Daniel from a chapter sequence perspective. Somebody ordered it this way. Or from a chronological sequence perspective. If we were doing this chronologically at this point, we would skip chapter 5 and 6. We would study chapter 7 and 8, then go back to 5, then do 6. Sorry, yeah, then do 6, and then 9, and then 10 through 12. Okay, there's a test on this at the end of the day, so keep track. Right? That's chronological, but the chapters aren't written in chronological order. Now, you know, you could have a field day trying to figure out, okay, maybe they come from outside of the world of the Beis Medrash. This would be, you know, the who wrote what sources. I'm not going there because that's not my frame of reference or perspective. But there's got to be a logic to why it's in this sequence. So let's put the chapters in chronological sequence, just for argument's sake. If I put the chapters in chronological sequence, the order of the book looks as follows. Chapters 1 through 4 is the stories of Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel and his friends from the eating of seeds when they're very young, the exile from Judah, and eventually Nebuchadnezzar, who through one dream and then his statue and then a second dream, ultimately learns faith and humility before God. That's Nebuchadnezzar chapter 1 through 4. Then chapters 7 through 8 of the early years of Belshazzar, and Daniel's vision for the fall of Babel and the rise of Persia and Greece. And both Persia and Greece are mentioned by Nebuchadnezzar, sorry, by Daniel explicitly. Then I have chapter 5, which is the fall of Belshazzar, the writing on the wall. Then chapter 6, Daniel in the lion's den, Darius year 1. Then I have Daniel's prayer for the end of the exile in chapter 9. And then Daniel's final vision in the early years of Koresh. That's the sequence of events and prophecies and chapters in chronological order. So I come back to this question, why are they written in this fashion? And the answer is really quite simple. But we need to, it's why it's important to see the forest. And you know, sometimes we kind of get so bogged down in the nuance of chapter by chapter, we don't always see the forest. And the forest is actually very interesting because there's a division in this book. Which chapter here, if I looked at this sequence, Daniel in chronological order, which section is out of order chronologically? Right, chapters 7 through 8. More or less, I could, if I took 7 and 8 out of this conversation, and we went 1 through 4 to 5, and then 6, 9, 10 through 12, more or less, they're in order. Agreed? My mystery here is chapter 7 and 8, which are the early years of Belshazzar that come after not only year 3 of Belshazzar, the writing on the wall and the feast, but also after the story in chapter 6 of Daniel in the lion's den. So if I look at it from the perspective of the book, 1, 2, 3, 4, Daniel and Hanani, Mishael, Azariah with Nebuchadnezzar, 5, the writing on the wall, story of the fall of Belshazzar, 6, Daniel in the lion's den, story of Dayavish Hamadi. Leave that over here. Park it. Now I have a second part. Year 1 of Belshazzar, year 3 of Belshazzar, year 1 of Dayavish, year 3 of Cyrus, part 2. In other words, I can divide the book up into two parts. And each unit is chronological. If I take chapter, if I take the story of Daniel in the lion's den, chapter 6, and move it. Okay? But if I look at the stories from chapter 1 through 6 as one unit, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, Dayavish, it's chronological. And I look at the book as a unit from chapter 7 to the end. Belshazzar year 1, Belshazzar year 3, Dayavish and Cyrus. It's chronological. Why am I overlapping them? Why is there in the middle this mix? And the answer is that the book is structured not by chronology, but by, what's the key? Excuse me?
Theme.
I missed the word.
Theme.
Something thematic.
Theme. Something thematic. Something contextual or content focused. Meaning, chapters 1 through 4, stories of Nebuchadnezzar. Chapter 5, Belshazzar, story of his feast and the writing on the wall. Chapter 6, Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den because he violates the king's command. All of that's part one. Part two, Daniel has a vision about Belshazzar and the fall of Babel in the first year. Daniel has a vision of the third year of Belshazzar and the fall of the Babylonian Empire and the rise of Persia and Greece. Daniel has a moment in which he calculates the end of the 70 years and he offers a prayer in Vidui for the Jewish people. Daniel has a vision about Cyrus and the end of Persia and the rise of Greece. What's the common theme between everything I've just described in the second half of the book?
International
development. Yes, but so is Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar is international.
Visions.
They're all visions or prayers of Daniel. Daniel's vision of the fall of Babel. Let's do this in sequence, not in chronology, right? Daniel's vision of the four animals in the fall of Babel. Daniel's vision and his calculations for the dates of the fall of Babel. Daniel's prayer to end the exile. Daniel's vision for Persia. Chapter 7 begins the second half of the book that starts with the visions and the stories, not of Nebuchadnezzar's dreams and Daniel called in to interpret, or Belshazzar's story of the handwriting on the wall and Daniel's called in to interpret, or Daniel's caught violating the king's command, even though he's an advisor of the king, gets thrown into the lion's den, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah violate the king's command and they get thrown into the furnace. No. Chapter 7 deals with Daniel's vision, Daniel's dreams, Daniel's nevuah, and the calculations that Daniel offers. Very different style. Very different moment. From that point, from Belshazzar until the end of the book, is chronological, but all about Daniel's visions. So if I looked at this book, 12 chapters, it divides extraordinarily neatly. It divides chapters 1 through 6, the stories, the events of Daniel and his friends in the kingdom of Babel and or Persia. Those are all history, moments, stories that took place. Chapter 7 through 12 are the nevuot and the visions that Daniel has that are separate. Different style, different message, different context. It's much analogous to the division we have in the book of, in Sefer Nevi'im, between the books of Nevi'im Rishonim and Nevi'im Achronim, early prophets and later prophets. Early prophets and later prophets is not a chronological division. I assume everybody understands that, right? What we call early prophets are the books of Joshua, Judges, Shemuel 1 and 2, Kings 1 and 2. What we call latter prophets are the books of Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and the 12 minor prophets, Treasa. That is not a chronological distinction, because all of the nevuot, all of the prophecies of Yirmiyahu are all taking place during the book of Kings. All of Yeshayahu is taking place during the book of Kings. It's not a chronological division earlier and later. It's a division of the events of the time period and the prophecies and visions of the Nevi'im that accompanied that time period. It's like, if I could take an analogy, taking all the speeches of history, critical speeches, and there are books that have been published. I just did a quick glance today over a bunch of different Amazon listings for books of famous speeches. Imagine taking the top 50 speeches of history and publishing them as a book. It wouldn't be history. It would be speeches. Here's a website. I just like this website because it's classic. It's exactly what we're talking about. Winston Churchill's speeches during World War II. It's an entire website. Winston Churchill's speeches. The influences of his early life and then during the war. Imagine publishing this as a book. It would read very differently than a history book of the time period. But you need the history to understand the speeches. You need the speeches to understand the history. Put them together, and essentially that's what you get in this description of Daniel. The first six chapters are the history, up until Daniel and the lions then in year one of Darius. The visions of Daniel, starting with back to year one of Belshazzar, start in chapter 7, and they're the second half of the book. So we could do this chronologically and learn the two visions of Daniel in Belshazzar's world before we read of the fall of Belshazzar, or we could stay the course and do this sequentially, which is in order of the events followed by the visions. We're going to mix and match. We're going to finish chapter 5, and then we're going to jump to chapter 7 and 8, so it can finish the Babylonian period, and then we're going to do the Persian period. So we're going to divide it slightly differently in our study, but this is important to understand the background and the sequence that's going on in this story. Somebody had a question. I heard a voice of a question. Yes? No? All right. Which brings us to now the beginning of an understanding of who Belshazzar is and where he fits into the picture. So to understand the Perek that we are studying, we need a little bit of background on how Tanakh views his, or how Chazal, more importantly for our perspective, saw the descriptions in Tanakh and interpreted them chronologically or historically. So our story really begins with the question of who is Belshazzar and who is Avim Rudach. There are three Babylonian kings that are identified in Tanakh. They are Nebuchadnezzar. Avim Rudach has a very brief mention in the end of the Book of Kings, and then Belshazzar. And Chazal give the 3 years of Belshazzar the total number of years that Belshazzar reigns. We have 3 years referenced in Tanakh, year one, year three of the two visions, and the year he dies. Chazal says, okay, that's what he reigned for 3 years. Whether or not that matches history or not, conversation to be had, but that's how this is attributed. And that leaves more or less 23 years in the middle for Avim Rudach, because I have a total of 70 years for the Babylonian period. Nebuchadnezzar has 45 years. I'll show you them in a moment. Belshazzar only has three. That leaves 23 for Avim Rudach. That is exactly what we have in this statement in the Medrash in Seder Olam. So a word about the Medrash of Seder Olam is in order because classic Rishonim, certainly Rashi, and many of the Rishonim who followed Rashi, took this Braita of Seder Olam and use it to build their understanding of the chronology of Tanakh. Seder Olam Rabbah is the 2nd century, this is taken from Wikipedia, but it's pretty accurate, 2nd century CE, Hebrew language chronology detailing the dates of biblical events from creation to Alexander the Great's conquest of Persia. It adds no stories beyond what is in the biblical text. We'll talk about that in a moment. More or less attributed to the year 160 by Rabbi Yosef ben Chalaf. It's a foundational piece for Rashi. Rashi builds his entire chronology of Tanakh around this work. Many Rishonim would disagree with Rashi's calculations for various moments in history, various moments in Tanakh, have to take issue with this Braita. For our purposes, however, it's important to understand what it is that we're dealing with. So the Medrash makes a very succinct statement. Nebuchadnezzar malach mem hei shana, Nebuchadnezzar reigned for 45 years. Avim Rudach b'no esim v'shalosh. Avim Rudach reigned for 23 years. And Belshazzar, his son, for 3 more years. Now, if you calculate that out, you'll find that it comes to 71. We have 70 years to Bavel, but an overlap of 1 year between two kings is not an uncommon phenomenon. How does this all begin? How do we start with 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar? So that's the easiest to calculate. We already established when we started our study of the Book of Daniel that Nebuchadnezzar's rise to power takes place during year 4 of the year, King Jehoiakim. That was one of our early discussions in the beginning, first chapter of the book. Jehoiakim gets sort of rebels, and he gets rebellion gets put down, and we're not going to rehash the story. But then at the end of the Book of Kings, Ben Shmona Esrei Shana Jehoiakim B'mocho, his son Jehoiakim, his uncle, is the son of Yeshiyahu, comes to the throne. Nebuchadnezzar Melech Bavel al Ir Vavadav. Nebuchadnezzar comes to Yerushalayim and takes Jehoiakim to exile. Vayetzei Jehoiakim Melech Yudah Melech Bavel, and he goes into exile. Vishnat Shmona Limalcho. Jehoiakim, the first exile, what we call Galut Jehoiakim, is in the year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar. So far, are you with me? Thumbs up if you're with me so far. Okay. The next reference point is the end of the Book of Kings. This is that verse about Avim Rudach. As far as I know, maybe he's mentioned again in Divrayamim. I haven't checked that, but it's the only reference we have to him. Vayhi b'shloshim b'sheva shana, 37 years after Galut Yehoyachin, in the 12th month, Nasa Avil Mirudach Melech Bavel Bishnat Malcho Ed Rosh Yehoyachin Melech Yudah Mi Beit Kela. Avil Mirudach You have to be careful not to be that evil Merodach. Right? He's not evil. It's actually in Chazal, he's attributed to be a very, very righteous king. Evil Merodach frees Jehoiachin from jail, takes him out of jail, puts him at the table with the kings, gives him the seat of honor next to him. Jehoiachin spent 37 years in jail. Evil Merodach becomes king. In year one, he takes Jehoiachin and puts him at his side. So we talked a little bit about this in the context of what happened to Nebuchadnezzar in those years that he went crazy. I mentioned the idea that Evil Merodach had taken over the throne for a few years, and then when Nebuchadnezzar came back, he threw Evil Merodach into jail, and that's where he met Jehoiachin. There is such a masorah. Not our issue for now, but our issue for now is that this all takes place. Year one of Evil Merodach is year 37 of Jehoiachin in jail. If Jehoiachin goes into jail in year 8 of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, that means how many years of Nebuchadnezzar's reign do I have? 45 or 44, depending on how you overlap them. And that is the calculation the Chazal used for the 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar. So if I have 45 years of Nebuchadnezzar and I have 3 years of Belshazzar, because that's all I have listed in Tanakh, I only have a reference to year one of Belshazzar, and I have a reference to year three of Belshazzar, and I have a reference to the year he dies, I don't have anything more than those 3 years. We can assume, as Chazal say many times, reference points in Tanakh are not there to confuse us, but to clarify, to make it clear. So if I only have 3 years in Tanakh for Belshazzar, I can only work with those 3 years. So if I have 45 years for Nebuchadnezzar explicitly, I have 3 years of Belshazzar explicitly, that leaves in the middle 23 years for Evil Merodach. That's more or less how chronology of Chazal works. And I want to make an observation about this concept. This is an important idea, an important reference to understand. It applies not only to Nebuchadnezzar and not only to the book of Daniel, but it really applies to a broader understanding in general of how Chazal saw chronology of reference in Tanakh. There are many points of challenge between what we call biblical chronology according to rabbinic interpretation and biblical chronology according to the world of archaeology and academia and history, etc. Somebody wanted to raise a question? I saw a hand go up. No? Okay. So there are many points of contention, many points of conflict. I don't know if you've ever heard of the problem of the missing 165 years of Jewish history. Okay? Chazal's chronology and lineage or years attributed to the events of Tanakh place certain intersection points that we know are fixed, but they're off by more or less 165 years. More or less those years are attributed to the Persian period of history. Debatable, but let's assume. The question of why that's the case. So what do I do with that? 165 years is a lot of time in biblical chronology. So here's a theory, and I've worked with this theory for many years. I think it's very powerful. It may not be so satisfying, but it's very important. Chazal work with a calculation. I'm going to actually stop sharing for a second so I can see everybody's faces. Chazal work with the calculation based on the assumption that what I have in Tanakh referenced explicitly are the only years and the only source of information I can work with. In other words, they were aware of the fact that there may be sources of information and history beyond the scope of what's in Tanakh. But if it's not mentioned in Tanakh, it's quote unquote not relevant. Not because it didn't happen, but because Tanakh is not history. Tanakh is a prophetic interpretation of history. Tanakh is the message of the Nevi'im to understand events in sequence. So if it's the message of the Nevi'im, if it was relevant to the Nevi'im's message, it was included. If it wasn't relevant, it's not included, and nothing I can do about that. I'll give you some very classic examples. One of the great mysteries is the identification of Achashverosh. Now, Chazal were aware of the fact, and certainly the Rishonim were aware of the fact, that in between Cyrus and Dayavesh and Xerxes, somewhere in between there, there was another Persian king by the name of Cambyses, Cambuzi. Rashi even says that Cambyses or Cambuzi is Achashverosh. Now, how Achashverosh and Cambuzi can be the same person is debatable. But that's Rashi's interpretation because he's dealing with this mystery. I have a king mentioned in history who's not in Tanakh. Chazal ignored it, not because they didn't believe it existed, but because that was their position. Seder Olam only calculates years that are recorded, that appear in Tanakh. I'll give you another example, even more powerful. How many years do Chazal attribute to the first temple period? To the building, to the Beit HaMikdash itself. How many years in total do Chazal attribute to the first temple? So that's a Tosefta Masechet Zvachim, Beit Olamim, the first temple, Abamiot Ve'eser, stood for 410 years. Libinyano. And then 420 for its second. So 420 for the second temple we talked about a little bit when we talked about that phrase, Acharit HaYamim. Where did Chazal calculate 410 years for the second temple, for the first temple, which is a source of a lot of the chronology issues? Right? Because it's the year of the Churban of the Beit HaMikdash, of the first temple, is 165 years off based on Chazal's chronology. So where does this 410 years come from? So I'll show you, it's a very simple calculation, but it's fascinating when you think about it from the perspective of how Chazal's perspective on chronology work. The temple is built in year 4 of Solomon. Between Solomon, I wonder if I charted this out for you. I don't think I did. Okay. Between Shlomo HaMelech and the end of, the temple is built in year 4. Between the end of Shlomo's life and the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash in the years of Tzidkiyahu, there are a total of 19 kings that come after Shlomo HaMelech. Okay? Mentioned in Tanakh. The total number of years, if you add them up sequentially, that are attributed by Tanakh, that are referenced in Tanakh to each of those kings without any missing years, just without, and without addressing any of the chronological challenges, of which there are many. But if I take all of those years of all the kings and I just literally add them all up, I take out there's two that reigned for 3 months, take those two out of the equation, how many years do I have? A total of, and I calculated this morning, total of 429 years. Okay? But there's always a year overlap between the reigning kings. So assuming a year overlap between the 19 reigning kings, if I take 429 years that are recorded, that appear in Tanakh, and I take out the 19 overlapping years between the kings, what do I have? 410. That's exactly how Chazal come up with the number, 410 years. Now, could there be other historical events that have taken place that have interjected that kind of change that chronology a little bit? Yes. And Chazal didn't deny that. They just, from their perspective, it's not relevant. I'll give you another classic example. Shaul HaMelech. There's a pasuk in the beginning in Sefer Shmuel Aleph that attributes to Shaul HaMelech 2 years. He's reigned for 2 years. I think it's Perek Yud Dalet, if I'm not mistaken. Now, in all of the events of Shaul HaMelech, we know that it's not possible for him to have reigned for only 2 years. The time he came to power until the time that David was anointed, it could not have been only 2 years. There's a year and a half of that time that David HaMelech is hiding from him. And Shaul fought many, many battles and many fronts all the way up into the north. So the Abarbanel and the Radak and many of the Mefarshim say, no, you have to reinterpret that verse. There's many more years attributed to Daniel, to Shaul HaMelech. But in Seder Olam Rabbah, which is the source of biblical calculations, there are 2 years in the chronology attributed to Shaul, because that's what the Pasuk says. And so there's a foundation, there's a loyalty that Chazal had to the text of Tanakh. It didn't matter if in the broader scheme of history, there were more years or less years. What mattered to Chazal was what's written in Tanakh, because that's what they're doing. They're studying the text, they're studying and understanding the text. It's the prophetic interpretation of history, not necessarily history. History as an objective observer is a field of that's invented by the Greeks. History from a prophetic observer perspective is what Tanakh is all about. And so you end up with this, you know, sort of the story of Persia is these three kings. Sorry, the story of Babel is these three kings, Nebuchadnezzar, Evil-Merodach, and Belshazzar. And the 70 years that we're talking about are critical to understand the messaging to Belshazzar. Now, it's true that there were, here I give you, I pulled this off of a Wikipedia website. This is the Neo-Babylonian Empire, which is the story of Nebuchadnezzar II, according to historical data. Neo-Babylonian Empire goes from the year 626, Nebuchadnezzar, who is not mentioned in Tanakh, but the events of Nebuchadnezzar are. Chazal seem to, Tanakh seems to combine the names. You have Nebuchadnezzar II, which is what we've been discussing. There's a king, according to the historical data, called Amel Marduk. I'm assuming that's what Chazal meant by Avil Merudach, although he's only given 3 years here. There's Nergalesser or Nergal Sharetzer, referred to in the Rishonim. There's another king here who lasts for a year. There's Nabunidus or Nabunaid. We'll talk about him in a moment. And then there's Belshazzar. And Belshazzar, according to historians, wasn't really even a king. Again, whether or not this chronology matches the chronology of Tanakh, whether or not in Tanakh have combined kings into one name. So take all of the events related to a period of time and put them under one name called Avil Merudach, who lasts 23 years. Maybe this whole time period is all Avil Merudach. Not my issue. It doesn't matter to me. It's quite possible. Because I'm not coming from the perspective of the academic understanding of history. That's a field of studying to itself. My perspective is to understand what Tanakh is telling me about this period of time. And all of this period of time is therefore called the period of Avil Merodach. And Belshazzar is the last period of this period of history. Even the story of Nebuchadnezzar's madness that drives him from the kingdom for 7 years, which we saw earlier, is fascinating. In the previous chapter, there is a story that's attributed to Nabunaid that is what brought down in various sources. I pulled it from Wikipedia because it's simply the easiest to see, but that he went absent from the kingdom for an entire decade. We don't have such a story about Nebuchadnezzar in historical sources, but we do have it about Nebuchadnezzar. Are these stories combined? I don't know. Or did it happen more than once? But nonetheless, from my perspective, what I wanted to understand is this perspective of 70 years. This Nevuah of 70 years, which is so critical to us. From the very beginning, Yirmiyahu sets before us the stage that there will be a 70-year period of time. Kimlot shivim shana efkod amelach bavel. After those 70 years, they will start from pasuk yud aleph. Kol ha'aretz azot l'chorban l'shama ve'avdu ha'goyim e'elet melech bavel shivim shana. You will go into exile. You will serve the nations. You will serve the king of Bavel for 70 years. Nebuchadnezzar, Yirmiyahu sets the stage for 70 years in the opening statement of the world of Nebuchadnezzar. And then at the end of those 70 years, Efkod HaMelech Bavel, I will hold Melech Bavel accountable. Similarly, Pasuk Chavtet, in Perek Chavtet, you have a similar statement that Koma Hashem kilfilimot lebavel shivim shana efkod etchem. After 7 years, I will redeem you. So when they go into exile, this is the message. This 70-year calculation, however you calculate it, is critical because not only does it spell the fall of Bavel, but it also coincides with the perceived or the prophetic anticipation of when the redemption will come. And that's Yirmiyahu. That's certainly Nebuchadnezzar. I have 3 years of Belshazzar in that calculation, because the fall of Bavel is the fall of Belshazzar. And then I have the final piece of it, which is Evil Merudach. Evil Merudach, you need to add one more pasuk to the mix, which is Yirmiyahu Chav Zayin, Pasuk Zayin, V'yavdu Oto Kol HaGoyim V'et B'no V'et Den B'no. You will serve in the Nebuchadnezzar, says Yirmiyahu, and his son and his grandson. Ad et bo atzah, until the time of the redemption will come. Who are the three generations mentioned, says Rashi? Nebuchadnezzar, his son Evil Merudach, and his grandson Belshazzar. Again, there could have been other kings in between, but they're not mentioned in Tanakh, and so they're not relevant to the discussion in this context. That sets the stage to understand that there's 70 years, that there's Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merudach, Belshazzar. By the time we go from the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar to the end of Belshazzar, more or less covered a span of those 70 years. Why is this so important? Okay? This is so important for us for a very simple reason. And this is, sets up the question that I want to ask today. I'm going to stop sharing for a second. I'm going to set up the question I want to ask today. Nebuchadnezzar's exile of Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, and Daniel, and his feeding them seeds, and the whole story of the opening chapter, certainly early in Nebuchadnezzar's life, Daniel and his friends are young. The story of Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue of multiple metals, and the reaction to it, the golden statue that Hanani, Mishael, Azariah refused to bow down to, and Nebuchadnezzar's dream about his going crazy until he learns a little humility, and Daniel, who says to him, you know what, you need to learn humility before God. Those three events sound like, they read like, they're all happening more or less in sequence, or more or less within a short period of time. And as we discussed them back at the beginning of this story, we suggested that they are in some way related to the fact that Nebuchadnezzar saw himself as a kind of punisher of the Jewish people. Nebuchadnezzar saw himself as, or at least by the time Yirmiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar or his generals finished their conversation, the message is clear that they understood that this was happening because God was allowing it to happen. And then when Nebuchadnezzar kind of oversteps that bounds, God puts him in his place. You have this chapter. I'll show you, and let me just do this one more piece of this. Chapter 40, you have this conversation between Yirmiyahu and Nebuzvadan. And in this conversation, Vayikach Rav Tabachim Yirmiyahu, Vayomre Lav, this guard, the captain, took Yirmiyahu and said to him, Hashem Elokecha Diber et Ara'ah Hazot El Makom Hazeh, your God pronounced this evil against this place. And God has brought this upon you. Your sin against God has been great. You didn't listen to him. And therefore, all of this has occurred. It's possible that this is all happening before all of those events of Nebuchadnezzar, but it reads much more like this conversation could happen after that interaction between Nebuchadnezzar and God about learning the role of God and the role of humility before God, because Nebuchadnezzar had a role to play in the destruction of the temple. So if that's the case, then the first four chapters of Nebuchadnezzar, or Daniel, are happening in the early years of Nebuchadnezzar. They're not dated, but this is the takeaway. Because they seem to all be related to the Churban, my assumption, therefore, is that they are early in that period of time. If that's true, then how many years have transpired between chapter 4 and Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar's absence and Daniel's message to him and the year Belshazzar dies? Or the beginning of Belshazzar's reign, year 1. Let's assume for the moment I've got 20 years of Nebuchadnezzar still. Okay, reasonable assumption. Of the 45, let's say the first events are happening in the first 10, 15 years of Nebuchadnezzar. As Daniel and his friends are growing up. Then I have 23 years of Avil Merodach, of which I know nothing. And now suddenly Daniel is back on the story in the beginning of Belshazzar. So here's my question, simple question. What happened to Daniel for 50 years? 50 years plus is the gap between the stories of Nebuchadnezzar and his reaction to the destruction of the temple and the beginning of the reign of Belshazzar. There's a gap of 50 plus years in the story of Daniel. Where did he go? What did he do? So we'll see. And I showed you briefly one point that Belshazzar, the beginning of that vision that Daniel has of Belshazzar, Daniel is in Shushan. He's not in Babel. He's in Shushan. He's not even in the kingdom. What happened to him? He ran away. He left. The story we're reading, or we're supposed to be reading, which will be the beginning of next week, right? But the story that we're studying, which is the story of Chapter 5 of Belshazzar's feast and his handwriting on the wall, if you look at the story, he has this vision and this handwriting on the wall, and it makes some pasiyada shekotevet. There's some handwriting that's there, and the king is shocked, and he doesn't know what to do, and he calls over all of his advisors, and they don't know what to do. And then in comes, I'm going to jump to a little bit later in the parak for a second, in comes somebody to set the record straight. Who is that person? The queen. Huge debate whether that's the queen or the queen mother or the queen grandmother. But Amakah comes into Belshazzar and says to him, "Le'umat divrei ha-melech v'sarav, le'bet ha-mishneh nichnasa," she comes into the feast and she says to the king, "And tam malka v'yamra, ha-melech lo'olim chiyei, the king should live forever. Don't be dismayed. Don't be afraid. Yesh ish b'malchutecha sheruach Elohim kedoshim bo. There is somebody in the kingdom in whom is the spirit of holy gods. Ubi me'avicha in the days of your grandfather. In this case, hera ve'askel v'chochmah k'chochmat olakim nimtza bo. He had light and he had wisdom and he had understanding. Ve'amelech Nebuchadnezzar avicha l'rav chartumim ashafim kazdim kosmim mekimo avicha melech. And your father Nebuchadnezzar made him one of the chief magicians. Why don't you go call him? Maybe he can explain to you what this vision means." Wait a second. Daniel's not even in the kingdom. Daniel's in Shushan. What happened? There's really one simple answer to this question, which is the same thing that happens to all the Nevi'im. They have a role to play. They have a task. They have a challenge. They have a charge. When they play that role, while they are given that mandate, when they are in their role, they have a place. But like so many statements, if their role was not to participate or to convey a message, then we don't know anything about what happened. The same way we don't know anything about the kings, we don't know anything about the Nevi'im. We don't know anything about the early years of Yechezkel because Yechezkel's story starts when he starts with the Nevuah. The same thing with Daniel. Daniel's message was to Nebuchadnezzar. And his message was critically important. We talked about this the last couple of weeks. His message was critically important to frame the religious context of the destruction, the Churban. the same conversation he has with Nebuzradan. So that Nebuzradan comes to him and he says, I know that this is happening because God is punishing the Jewish people. So that we would understand that this was predictable, that there is a message, there is a purpose, there is a context, and there will be a redemption. That's Daniel's role to Nebuchadnezzar. Once that message is conveyed, Daniel has nothing left to say to Nebuchadnezzar. He has nothing in his message that's relevant for Evil Merodach. And so for all those years, we don't know anything about him, like any of the Nevi'im. He's simply not on the equation. Is he there? Sure. But we don't have the information. Until he becomes relevant again. And when he becomes relevant again is now to implement or to guide or to accompany the very prophetic or prophecies that he had at the beginning, which is the fall of Babel. So he's there to guide Nebuchadnezzar and to guide the people in understanding the religious context of the Churban early years. And he's there to help guide the visions that will predict the fall of Babel and the fall of Belshazzar, which already he's had two visions about the fall of Belshazzar and the fall of Babel, but before he gets invited to come to read the handwriting on the wall, that's what Daniel is going to do. And so what we're going to pick up from next week is we're going to start the read of chapter 5. And as we read it, think, if you want to do some homework, you can read it in advance. Simple question to ask yourself. In all the conversations Daniel has with Nebuchadnezzar, the style of his conversations, the style of the dialogue, the style of how he treated Nebuchadnezzar, is it the same or is it different in terms of how he speaks to Belshazzar? Does he speak to Belshazzar with the same reverence, same dignity, same respect accorded to the kings of the empires? Where is Daniel and Belshazzar in this conversation? So that's the background. Today was a kind of a chronology and an overview of the story of the whole book, and wanted to have that in our arsenal. Bezrat Hashem, next week, we will delve into chapter 5 in much more detail, go through the famous story of the handwriting on the wall, try to figure out what it means. That should take us, by my calculation, two more weeks for this chapter, and then we will continue from there. I appreciate your time. I'm going to stop here, but if people have questions, I'm happy to spend a few more minutes and
Rabbi, you have mentioned that the reign of the first temple was about 420, 410 years old.
Sorry, hang on 1 second. There's multiple voices. I'm having a hard time hearing. Sorry, can you ask the question again?
The question is, it's the first Beit HaMikdash was for 420, 410 years.
Other way around. First is 410. Chazal attributed the second 420. Also debatable historically, but that's...
Is this possible for the years of Shemitah that were not done in all those years? That's why 70 years of the first Galut related to those years.
You're talking about a reference to whether or not they were being, the 70 years are connected to the assumption of a negligence in the laws of Shemitah during that time period. I'd have to work that calculation through. There is such a calculation based on the Pasuk in Yecheskel. I would have to work through, how that,
because after 6 years, after every 6 years, supposed to be Shnat Shmita.
Yeah, but that doesn't impact the years of the Beit HaMikdash. Beit HaMikdash stood for 410 years. That's the story of the Book of Kings.
Okay, because
how the 70 years relates to the years of Shmita is a good question, but I don't think it's relevant to the question. I don't think it connects to the question of how many years the temple stood for.
Did the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, improved in those 70 years of Galut, that they have to
serve? That is a really good question. That is a really good question. Did we learn anything from our exilic experience? I would say yes and no. That's a much longer conversation. Okay. And it's really relevant to the book of Ezra and Nehemiah. But the short of it is yes, because the primary drive during the first temple period that essentially does not become relevant in the second temple was the drive of pagan idolatry. And that lesson we learned the hard way. What we didn't learn was how to get along with each other. But that's really about the latter years of the temple period. And usually when political turmoil starts, those are usually the years when you get the most conflict. And so there's a lot to be said for that. And we can talk about that, but it'd be beyond the scope for right now to answer that question.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I appreciate everybody. I will take a look at the chat questions and I'll try to address some of them. If you want, come on next week, 15 minutes earlier, if you can, and we will be happy to try to look at some of those chat questions. And Ishir, if you don't mind just saving the chat for me. And thank you. Thank you for your time. And love to see people's faces. So feel free to turn your cameras on either before or after or during. And have a wonderful day.
Everybody for being here. Shavua Tov. We'll see you next week.